It's the station that's bringing you Tag for Swag.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Faith Perlow, and Dan Novak. Brian has a story about the health of blue whales. Scientists are concerned about the largest whales in the ocean because they have been consuming millions of tiny plastic particles each day. If you are a friend to dogs, you will want to listen to the story from Faith. She tells us about a restaurant in San Francisco, especially for dogs. If you go there, you can choose from quail eggs or chicken skin waffles. After that, Dan Novak brings us a story about how the family of a famous writer is keeping the spirit of etiquette alive. Starting 100 years ago, Emily Post wrote about social rules, and now her relatives have updated her advice for current times. If you are a student thinking of coming to study in the U.S., you will want to stay with the program for Andrew Smith's story about plagiarism and how to avoid using someone else's work as your own. That is in this week's Higher Education Report. And finally, we will close today's show with words and their stories. You will want to hear Ana Mateo's advice about keeping your hands clean. And now, here's Brian Lynn.
Researchers have estimated that blue whales take in about 10 million pieces of microplastics each day. Microplastics are particles of plastic debris that are less than 5 millimeters long. They come from the breakdown of many kinds of plastic products and industrial waste. Particle levels have been building up in the world's oceans for many years. The possible health effects on whales from eating microplastics are still not well understood. Scientists studied three species of baleen whales, blue, fin, and humpback. Baleen whales are born without teeth, but they have special plates in their mouths that filter food. They feed on very small animals, mainly the shrimp-like creatures called krill. A study by the researchers says the estimated 10 million pieces of microplastics blue whales eat daily weigh about 44 kilograms. The whales were studied off America's Pacific coast. Research results were recently reported in the publication Nature Communications. The study found that fin whales may take in up to 6 million microplastic pieces a day. Humpbacks that mostly feed on krill likely eat about 4 million microplastic pieces daily, the researchers said. Humpbacks that favor fish may take in a much smaller amount, about 200,000 pieces a day. Matthew Savoca was a co-writer of the study. He told the Reuters news agency that about 99% of the plastic material came from other animals the whales eat, not from the water they filter. The study demonstrates the different reasons baleen whales may be at a heightened risk for taking in microplastics. These include the way they feed, the amount of food they eat, and the fact that their environment is close to polluted areas. Blue whales can grow up to 30 meters long. Fin whales can reach 24 meters, while humpbacks are generally about 15 meters. The researchers estimated the daily microplastic intake by examining the food search behavior of 126 blue whales, 65 humpbacks, and 29 fins. They used measurements from electronic tag devices that they attached to the animals' backs. The device was equipped with a camera, microphone, and a GPS tracker. They then considered levels of microplastics that exist in the travel path of the whales. A study published last year suggested that blue whales off the U.S. Pacific coast eat about 10 to 20 tons of krill daily. Fin whales eat an estimated 6 to 12 tons of krill a day, while humpbacks take in about 5 to 10 tons of krill or 2 to 3 tons of fish daily. The new study found that the whales mainly feed at ocean depths of 50 to 250 meters. This is within the area with the highest measured microplastic levels in the open ocean environment. I'm Brian Lynn.
The city of San Francisco, California, is known as a city for people who love food, or foodies. There are many award-winning restaurants. San Franciscans also love dogs. So dog owner and chef Rami Masarwe decided to combine his two loves into one. He has opened the first and only restaurant for dogs. The restaurant is called Dogue. The name is like the word vogue, which means fashion. It opened in September in the city's popular Mission District. Individual dishes cost around $30. Or for $75 each, dogs can dine on a multi-course Bon Appetit meal. The special meal includes chicken skin waffles and raw steak with a quail egg. The price also includes a baked good and an alcoholic drink for the dog's owner. Masarwe left his job of running a fine dining restaurant to open his Dogue. Some people are expressing their opinions about the costly menu. They are noting some of the city's issues, including income inequality, homelessness, and gentrification. Gentrification is the process of changing a place by making it more appealing to wealthier people. But Masarwe has received a lot of support from his customers. They are thankful to have a place to treat their furry friend. Recently, Dogue held 3 dog birthday parties at the same time. Gleddy Espinoza is the owner of Mason. He is an 11-year-old miniature dachshund. Mason enjoyed some mushroom soup with pieces of chicken. I wanted to celebrate him. He is so special to me. He's my 4-legged child. And this is the perfect place to do a really nice celebration. We're foodies. I guess he is too now, Espinoza said. Masarwe uses costly ingredients to prepare his food. Everything he makes could be eaten safely by humans, but we probably would not like it. The dog dishes may taste very bland or flavorless to us. Doug's goal is to spread the idea of feeding dogs fresh, healthy, and natural food. Some research shows that natural food may be better for a dog's stomach than the dog food that you can buy in a store. Masarwe said he enjoys seeing the joy that Doug brings to its customers. I've worked in restaurants for many years, and it's rare when, as a chef, I walk into the dining room, and every single guest has a smile on their face, he said. There's something very unique and satisfying about that. I'm Faith Perlow.
The famous American expert on manners, Emily Post, died in 1960. But two of Post's family members have updated her book of advice for the 21st century on the 100th anniversary of the first edition. Etiquette is a word describing the rules for acceptable behavior among members of a society. But different societies and cultures have different rules. I think mostly that it's really easy to paint etiquette and manners as tools for elitism, tools for secrecy, tools for exclusion, said Lizzie Post. She is Emily's great-great-granddaughter and co-writer of the latest Emily Post's Etiquette. But when we're using etiquette and manners as a tool for self-reflection and awareness of others, I think we're really going to have a chance to make the world a nicer place, she said. Post published her first version of the etiquette book under a different name in 1922. The book has been changed over the years, but the 20th edition, which was released in October, is its biggest update. The new book still has advice for setting dinner tables and dressing up for different events. There is also advice on how to give gifts and how to give extra money to food servers. But Post and her cousin and co-writer Daniel Post Senning are interested in modern issues. They have included ideas from people who called in to their awesome etiquette podcast program. Some of the issues have been made timely by the COVID-19 pandemic and the hashtag MeToo movement, which reacted against sexual abuse. The book covers issues like handshakes and seeking permission to hug or kiss on the cheek, actions that once were common. There is also advice on how to handle failed marriages and separations. Avoid trying to push or suggest the right decision for a friend, the Posts write in the new book. It's especially important to be careful what you say around children whose parents are separated or divorcing. The book also deals with subjects that were not described in Emily Post's time, like mourning a miscarriage. You do not want to say things like, "next time it'll happen," or "this just wasn't your time," the book advises. Emily Post grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and New York City. But through her travels, Emily learned more about the lives of those outside her social status. The younger Posts also deal with the subject of privilege. In the book, they write, Privilege can be and sound like many different things, but it mostly comes across as a lack of awareness that you have benefited in a way others may not have. Modern-day manners on gender pronouns, like he and she, are also discussed in the new book. Using the pronoun a person wants to be called is a way to show support and respect, the book says. You might think someone's pronouns are easy enough to tell just by looking at them, but the reality is this isn't always the case, the Posts wrote. In her books, Emily Post grew more inclusive over the years, said Lizzie, her great-great-granddaughter. Emily Post's etiquette became more based on education than wealth, she said. For that, Lizzie Post said, I'm happy. I'm Dan Novak.
In the digital age, it has become easy for students to find and copy published material. But copying another person's writing without giving them credit can get students into big trouble.
Copying another person's writing without giving them credit is called plagiarism.
Dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster says the word plagiarism comes from the Latin word plagiarus. It means kidnapper. But now we use it to describe someone who steals words rather than children. In the United States and other Western countries, universities have rules for avoiding plagiarism. But learning to correctly follow these rules can be difficult for some international students.
Why do universities and publishers care so much about copying even very small parts of someone's writing? American copyright law protects original works of authorship, including books, movies, music, images, and artworks. It also extends protection to computer software and architecture. The owner can sell the work or permit others to use it. The idea is that copyright helps society make progress. If people can make money by owning their creations, called intellectual property, then more people will want to create original works. The law permits the unlicensed use of copyrighted works, called fair use, for activities including criticism, comment, news reporting, education, and research. However, there are some limitations. In education, students can include a very small part of copyrighted works in their writing and research if they provide credit, or citation, to the original creators.
Many universities, such as Harvard, even urge students to give credit to information or sources of ideas they get from conversations with professors or other students. Harvard even warns students about copying themselves. That is, they cannot hand in the same work for more than one class without the permission of their instructors. A failure to do so is considered plagiarizing. Just as it is easy to copy, it is also easy for professors to know if a student has plagiarized. First, there are computer programs that compare students' papers to large databases of published writing. The programs can identify whether students have copied published writing. Second, if English is not a student's first language, a professor might recognize a change in vocabulary and writing style. This could bring more attention to the student's paper. The punishment for plagiarism can vary. professors could simply warn a student not to do it again, lower their grade, or they may fail the student in that class. In more extreme cases, a student may be temporarily banned or expelled from school.
Some international students in the U.S. struggle to avoid plagiarism and learn the rules of citation. Part of the difficulty is due to cultural differences. Some cultures do not have a long historical and legal tradition of protecting intellectual property. In these cultures, knowledge has been considered something common to everyone without ownership. In others, copying is seen as showing respect for the writing and thinking of experts rather than themselves. If English is not a student's first language, sometimes finding words to express complex ideas could be difficult. Thus, copying becomes the way the students try to express their ideas.
Stephen Horowitz is a professor of legal English at Georgetown Law in Washington, D.C. In an email to VOA Learning English, he said, "I've talked with students from Middle East cultures who have explained to me that they often are not expected to cite because a lot of things they quote are so familiar to everyone that there is no need or expectation of citing." Horowitz said, "I know on occasion some international students will use quoted text because they feel like their own words can't do justice to the meaning in the quoted text and feel like it's not their place to suggest alternative text. It's often a challenge to explain to international students the need for citation, even in sentences when you don't use quoted text," he added.
There are free tools to make citations easier for students and to avoid plagiarism. Zotero is a free open source program that helps organize all the research a student may use. For example, it can automatically create citations and combine them into a list. The Purdue Online Writing Lab, or Purdue OWL for short, is another free resource. Many universities also have writing centers where students can learn the citation rules.
And another way for students to learn how to avoid plagiarism is to read published papers and pay careful attention to how information is presented. Students should observe when and how citations are used. This can help them learn the rules of citations. Finally, remember that in educational or academic writing, it is better to cite too much than too little. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. We give examples and notes on usage. Today, we talk about something that sounds dirty, because it is. To grease someone's palm. When we grease someone's palm, we give them money or something else valuable to get what we want. Simply put, it is an act of bribery. For example, if someone greases a government official's palm, the person secretly gives money to the official in order to get something they want. You may also hear this expression used with the word oil instead of grease. Grease and oil help some machines work smoothly. Grease and oil are both black, slippery materials. They prevent friction when pieces of machinery
touch, or rub together. You could argue that bribing people to get what you want works the same way. It makes a process work better, at least for the person doing the greasing. Now, sometimes when we grease someone's palm, it is not as serious as bribery. If you have ever secretly put money into someone's hand or palm for the purpose of getting a favor from them, you have greased their palm. But don't worry, palm greasing is not always illegal. Sometimes it just simplifies a process or helps avoid a long wait. Other times, it gives you access that may be denied to others. For example, at a restaurant, you could give someone money to get a better table. You could also give money to a tour guide to see areas closed to others. I once had a friend who would often grease her little brother's palm when her boyfriend visited. This little bit of palm greasing guaranteed that she and her boyfriend would have some privacy. Her little brother kept his word, and her parents never knew about the boyfriend's visits. These examples of palm greasing may be secret, but they are not illegal. They simply make something happen more quickly or easily. And that brings us to the end of this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Thank you, Anna, for that story about a slippery subject. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. I'll be back in a moment. But first, my colleague Ashley Thompson is here with some more information about a new program from Learning English.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Thank you, Ashley. And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. We hope you enjoyed our program. Now for a quick review of the show. In our first story, you learned about the concerns scientists have about blue whales. Researchers say the whales take in 44 kilograms of tiny plastic pieces each day as they feed on small sea creatures called krill. Later on, you heard from Faith Perlow about an interesting restaurant in San Francisco. At Dogue, people can bring their dogs to eat meals that cost about $75 apiece. Then, Dan Novak told us about the great-great-granddaughter of famous writer Emily Post, who made her name writing about social rules starting 100 years ago. Lizzie Post said she is working to make the world a nicer place. Then you heard from Andrew Smith and Jill Robbins about how to avoid taking credit for other people's work while writing for school. And finally, you heard about greasy palms in Words in Their Stories from Ana Mateo. I thank all my Learning English colleagues for their fine work on today's program. If you want to find out more about the world in an English style that is a little bit slower, visit us at learningenglish.voanews.com. We'll also be here tomorrow with another episode that can help you learn English with stories from around the world. I'm Dan Friedel.